This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got. Wildlife Control Supplies. Proven solutions for wildlife control. Delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company. Have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Hello guys, and welcome to Trapping Across America. I'm Chip Davis. I'm sitting in again as guest host of Trappin' Radio tonight, and want to welcome you. Well, we got a really, really cool show lined up for you tonight. Sitting outside once again, you may hear some background noise and some birds going to roost, or actually right across the way about 150 yards. We're actually at the NTA Southeast Regional. We're in Alabama, in Rainesville, Alabama, just outside Fort Payne at the regional. Today was the first day of the regional. We're recording the show, and so they've got still got some functions going on as part of this event, and they're kind of going on with a loudspeaker, so you may hear some of that. I think they got an auction going on here shortly, but hopefully we're far enough away that the audio will be fine on this show. And so just want to welcome you, Clint's out this week. He's taking care of some business. Clint, be safe out there, and he'll be back with you the next week. But this week we do have a really cool show. Had a chance to sit down with a guy that's sitting just right across the table from me now. A guy that I think a lot of you guys know and are going to recognize his name. I think it's going to be a really, really fun and cool interview. I'm sitting here with Lee Roussat. So Lee, go ahead and introduce yourself, and we'll just kind of jump right off into the interview itself and kind of get started. So just kind of tell us who you are, where you're from, and all that sort of thing.
All right, guys, my name is Lee Roussat. I also go by Liesel. I'm from Western South Dakota. I'm a professional fur harvester out there. And what I mean by professional fur harvester, guys, I'm a full-time fur harvester. I'm trapping fur for fur. I'm not an ADC guy. I don't do ADC work for hire, so it's strictly chasing fur. And then I've got my bait and lure business, and that's a big part of what I do as well. That's Roussat's Extreme Performance Baits and Lures.
Cool. How did... You look like you're about my age, probably mid-40s, is that close?
Yeah, just about 40. I actually turned 39 in a couple...
Oh, really? Wow, I had you a little older than that. Okay.
Turned 39 in a couple of days here on the 26th. Well,
cool. Yeah, it's how did you get started trapping?
It started as a hobby. Cats were really high in South Dakota, and I started out on trapping cats, and got pretty proficient at that, but just chasing the cats didn't really cover the expenses of going, so I expanded what I was doing and started trapping every land species that we had in South Dakota, and that's when things really started coming together for me.
Cool. How old were you at that time?
I've actually only been in this industry about 10 years.
Oh, wow. Wow. So you were just in your mid-20s probably when you started.
I was in my mid-20s when I started. Okay. I had been trapping with my grandfather. My grandfather was a trapper on the eastern side of the state, but he's a water trap. And I can still remember when he caught his first coyote. He thought he had caught the neighbor's German Shepherd. But I was a young kid, you know, when that was going on.
It's interesting you say that. I had somebody come by the booth today, and... I forget the exact story. You know how it is. You talk to folks from yesterday with setup day. I noticed you were swamped.
busy.
That's right. You know, and at any rate, the guy today made a comment, something about, I'd ask him how long you've been trapping or something, and he had said, well, I started when I was a kid with my grandpa, and he said it took me a time or two. He said, I didn't know it then, but that's when I got hooked, but I didn't start again until I was a teenager.
That was my first exposure of it.
Exactly.
They were a farmer, and in the off season, they chased muskrat and beaver and very little land trap. They didn't have coyotes back then.
Right.
I mean, when he caught his first coyote, that was a big deal.
Right.
You know, just because they weren't there. They weren't abundant like they are now today.
Exactly.
Raccoons and that kind of thing.
I got you. So South Dakota, is that still in the high dollar cats?
Yep, Western South Dakota. Okay. We definitely get graded as a Western cat. Mm-hmm. So we've got a beautiful, beautiful animal.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So. I noticed on your booth you had quite a few pelts there, some really, really good look. I meant to comment on that today, and some good looking white spotted bellies there.
And the funny thing about those cats that I've got tanned on the booth is they're actually the lower end of our cats, because I had a year when I had quite a few cats that I'd caught, and those cats were bringing at that time was about $300 that lower end, and I thought, well, I'm going to keep a few and tan them.
Wow.
And so that's the lower end of our cats on our booth.
Yeah, and the lower end still looks really good.
Beautiful animal.
So you started. You started off in the cats, and kind of expanded to the land animals, and so just kind of pick us up from there.
Yeah, when I went into starting going after coyotes, I mean, I can remember my first year when I caught. I think that first year I really targeted coyotes. I think I caught 26 or something. It was this low number, and then the next year it was 50, and then. Mm-hmm. Then we got up to 100, and then we got up to 200, and then somewhere it turned into an addiction.
Right.
Where you just couldn't back off. And then it's probably been I suppose 7 years ago, I started tinkering with my own baits and lures and, and really progressing that and fine tuning that. And that's when I got into that. And then I came up with some stuff that really worked well for me. And that's what I'm using and promoting today. You know, that's what I promote, you know.
So awesome. I think, you know, I've interviewed a couple of guys that, you know, are professional, in other words, year-round. They've got traps set, fair knot, something like this. They're pretty much got iron in the ground all the time. And it seems like that's such a common story, that they start out, you know, they love the, and it was for me. I started out with coyotes were just almost mythical. It's like, you can't catch a coyote, you know?
I can remember with the coyote deal, I had a guy tell me that, you'll never be a proficient coyote trapper with the way you trap bobcats. And I mean, that was a personal challenge.
Right.
When that guy said that.
Exactly.
And now to go out and trap a few hundred coyotes is a common adventure.
Right.
And that's fun, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, it's a blast. And it's, you know, I always tell guys, you know, the first one's the hardest. Capturing the first one's the hardest.
That's right.
And then you just continue to learn and you get better.
Absolutely. Well, and you made a comment just then that, you know, you caught 20 and then you caught 50 and then you caught 100. And then I think you used the word, it became an addiction. I love that.
That's
exactly what happened to us.
I actually used to work in corporate America. I mean, I had wool slacks and the shiny shoes and a nice button down shirt. And I went to work and then I'd get done and I would go out and run my line at night. You know, I'd get out of the office between 4 and 5:30 and I'd run till 3 or 4 in the morning checking my traps. And in South Dakota, we have a 3-day check.
Right.
And so I would run 2 days hard. And then the third day, I wouldn't run any traps, but I'd have to get my fur put up on the third day.
Right.
And this is going on. And I mean, I was just pounding the ground, running my butt into the ground.
Right.
And when it hit me that I had an issue was when I had to do interviews. I was interviewing like 13 guys for a driver position the next day, and I get stuck in the snow. And I know I gotta be home and showered and in the office with my boss to do interviews the next morning. He's coming in from across the state. And I literally walk in the door, I shower, get my clothes on, and I head to the office. And I am dead tired interviewing these guys. And I told my wife, I said, something's got to change.
Wow.
Something's got to change. And there were some other factors that played into it. And that's when I made the leap of faith to make it work. And when you do that and you go in both feet front first, you make it work.
That's right.
So you don't have any other choice.
Right.
So
that's absolutely a catalyst. I'm always interested in what actually flips that switch to make that decision. And I've talked to and interviewed a couple of guys that are just like that. And they're all different. They're all unique. You know, some people are just fed up with corporate America. Some people are other reasons. Some people just are so ready for the change of pace. But
well, and now when my phone rings, it's somebody I want to talk to.
Yeah.
It's not a driver calling at, you know, 12 o'clock at night or 1 o'clock in the morning with an issue.
Right.
You know, it's people I want to talk to.
Exactly.
Now. And that's awesome.
That's right.
The stresses are different. You know, the stresses are your own now.
Yes, exactly.
So it's really been a blessing. You know, I left corporate America 5 years this November, and I've never looked back and regretted one moment of it.
Yeah, that is so cool. That is so cool. That's, you know, it's just like these shows. I mean, we're so fortunate to hang around with trappers in general. They're just the salt of the earth kind of people, I think.
There's a lot of wonderful people here.
It really is.
A lot of wonderful people. And you meet people that have watched and followed you. And then you get to meet them and they realize you're another person.
You've
got goals and aspirations and you've got family. And we've all got a story.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I remember, to use this radio show for example, I remember Clint saying a lot of times he would call and he would say, you know, Predator Control Group, this is Clint. And say, this is Clint. Like, they were expecting the secretary
or somebody else to
go way up the chain. And he said, no, who else did you think was going to answer my phone? So, and his folks, just like these guys who are listening to this radio show, that's who we get to have an opportunity to talk to at these shows and interact with. And That is so cool.
Yeah, and you get to help. I mean, these people be successful at what you're successful at, and that's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, that is, and it's in and of itself so rewarding to me when you're able to answer questions intelligently for some of these guys. And not to say that we're any better or any worse, we've just been doing this thing for a while. And, you know,
I think it's time on the ground that we've spent on the ground. I mean, we live out on the ground, you know, and we're fortunate enough to do that with the decisions we've made to do that. And it's, and just that time makes you so much better.
That's right, the work and the effort. And
so,
when we're, you know, I think the thing is, the rewarding thing is to be able to save some of these guys, if they've got some specific questions, some of the headaches or heartaches that we had to pound it out.
I look at the way I taught, and it was kind of foolish. I'm kind of bullheaded and stubborn, and I didn't buy books. I didn't buy DVDs when I learned how to trap. I wish I would have, because it would have sped up my learning curve tremendously. But on the flip side of that, the way I trap, I don't trap the way that is conventionally taught for people to trap coyotes. I'm not that guy. I do things that really go against the grain of what the traditional coyote trapper has been taught. Right. And I'm not saying my way is right and their way is wrong, but my way has a value, just as theirs does, because I put up the numbers that prove that the methods are working.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think being self-taught that way is kind of giving me a different perspective on some of these things.
Exactly. Well, and I think that's got just tremendous value. I want to go into that. First, I want to point out how fortunate we all are. Even, I mean, I'm sure you have questions about things from time to time. I'm sure you got go-to guys that you call and ask. I certainly do. I've talked about a lot of those even on this radio show. No way, shape, or form are we saying we know it all or even claim that we know much of it. It's just we know what we know, and that's all we know. What I was going to try to say was, I actually started in the 80s, and you couldn't pry information. There were no DVDs. There was no YouTube. There was no Google.
A handful of books, and that was it.
And even the books wouldn't disclose very much, and only a handful of guys, if any. I didn't know of any at the time, but maybe do a little bit of personal instruction, and you had to be in the inner circle
to get
that. And so now it's a different age. A guy now, a teenager that's just coming into this, and I think we're seeing a lot of that, he's got a world of information, you know.
Let's face it, we're in a world of instant gratification. We're half of us are probably going to listen to this podcast on our phone going down the road.
We're
all instant gratification now, and we've got this generation of youth that instant gratification is just the way they've been brought up.
Right.
And now we have the opportunity as professionals and experts at what we do to help these people become successful quicker.
Right.
And that's big. They can be successful, and they're going to stay in it longer, and they're going to be a part of our world, which is great.
I think you're exactly right. And, I trapped for a little while, fur kind of went down, I kind of got out. And part of that was because it was such hard work, you know?
It is work, and there's nothing easy about it.
Exactly, but without the reward, I don't mind the work. I'm a worker. I enjoy work, but I like to be sometimes rewarded for my work, too. And so I think that's what the guys have a chance to gain is they become successful quicker.
Yep, and I think that's great. Yep. Go out, a guy can go out and catch, whatever his species is, the knowledge is out here to gain.
Right.
And there's people that are willing to help you get that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If somebody's coming up to me and they've got a struggle with, they can't catch a coyote, or they're, I'm going to try and help them walk that person through as best I can to what I think the situation is that's causing them not to catch it. And it's normally something simple.
Right, right, exactly.
It's a simple mistake that we're making, and a couple adjustments, and a guy can go out and catch some coyotes.
That's right. Well, I want to kind of turn a little bit and go into a little bit of your strategy. And for guys that listening, I just met Lee last night for the first time. So Lee and I have not had time to really talk. That's right.
Here it is.
Hey, would you mind doing a radio interview for me? Sure. Where are we going? So I think we got a lot in common, and I'm a coyote guy too. That's all. We're live market coyotes in Mississippi. But this is not about me. It's about you. I would like to hear a little bit about your strategy and your approach and kind of the way you think coyotes, just because I'm a coyote guy. That's more what I think about and relate to all the time. Is I'd love to hear that, and I think the guys out here listening would as well.
Well, first off, when I'm looking at let's say ground to trap coyotes in, there's got to be coyotes there. You know, I'll drive 110 miles on one of my days to get to my first spot to start checking coyote traps. And it's because I'm going to where the animals are.
Right.
I'm not going to chase a mediocre population of coyotes. I want to go to where there's a high-density population of coyotes, because you immediately become more successful. You know, you put more traps in the ground, you catch more coyotes, and that's, I want to put up the biggest numbers I can in the shortest amount of time. And that's the one big thing, is I go to where the coyotes are. And that's not... you got to be careful, I guess, when you're listening to landowners talk. A lot of landowners, they hear the coyotes howling, and they think they got a bunch of coyotes.
They got 5,000 coyotes.
Yep. And you got to read. I mean, you really got to read the people. And, and the big thing is I had a good friend of mine in Michigan. He asked me about you know, he catches a really decent number of coyotes. I mean, he's a heck of a coyote trapper. But he asked me, he says, how do I go to that next step of catching more coyotes? And I said, well, how many coyotes are you catching in your spots? And he says, well, I got one spot that's got seven or eight coyotes in there. And then he's got, you know, some other spots where he's catching two or three or one or two here and there. And I said, well, you got to get rid of all them spots where you're catching one or two or two or three. And you need to find those spots where you can catch seven or eight in all those spots. And that's hard to do.
Right.
I mean, I had some of the best cat country in the state of South Dakota that I was trapping, but it's also sheep country, so they fly it so hard that there just aren't any coyotes left.
Right.
And so you're chasing what's left over. And you're never going to put big numbers of coyotes up in those areas.
Right.
You may put a mediocre number of coyotes up there, but you're never going to put big numbers up. And I started in that area. I mean, that's where my backbone of trapping started.
Right.
And you got to be willing to walk away from those spots that are mediocre in search of the really good spots.
I think that's a hard thing for a lot of guys to do, especially if they don't approach this whole with a mindset from the onset.
Yeah. You know, well, I think you gotta approach it, whether you're a hobby guy or not. I mean, you still have to approach it from a business aspect.
Absolutely, yes.
I mean, because you're putting out, you got outputs going out every day. You got bait and lure going out. You got gas. You're wearing your vehicle down. Is it going to pay? And it's not all about the money for everybody. I mean, I totally get that. But I'm a fur trapper.
Right.
If it's not paying, I got to go to a place that is.
That's right.
And and it's not just the coyotes that I take into consideration on that, guys. It's when I go into a place, I'm going after the coyotes, I'm going after the coons, the fox, the skunks, anything that's there to offer, badger, I'm going to try and capture all those animals. But if it's not paying, you got to be able to walk away. And it's hard. I mean, some of those places, it took me 3 years to finally pull the pin and say, I'm done, you know?
Right.
And it's a hard decision to make. But then what you do is you see your catch go up.
Exactly. Yeah.
You walk away, you give up this awesome ground for one species.
Right.
But you watch the rest of your catch. Your catch goes up because now you're in better ground. And they're just hard decisions to make.
That's right. Right.
So, but they got to be made. And going out of state, too, is another one. You know, that's, when I go out of state, I'm doing a lot of research before I go, and I'm got a pretty good idea what I think the population densities are based on conversations with the biologist or the wardens or just people that have been there before in the area, whether they're coyote callers or hunters or houndsmen. I mean, there's a wealth of knowledge out there. You just got to know how to work that knowledge to figure out what the population densities are and then go from that.
I'm always real interested in those angles too, and you named several really, really, really good ones there, from the conservation departments from state to state to the individual wardens to network of individuals you even meet at shows like this. So you're from South Dakota. You know, I was thinking about making a road trip next year, and you start swapping information. And I'm always interested in those ideas because it's information, like you said, information's everywhere, contacts are everywhere.
Yeah, and it's as simple, guys. I have left the state of South Dakota simply on, last winter was a good one. we got snowed out. The ground I was trapping got snowed out something terrible. The wind wouldn't quit. The snow was deep. It wouldn't get warm enough to put a crust on it. So it just constantly, I mean, you knew some of those days you dug your traps out and an hour later they drifted back in, you know, and you're just shaking your head going, oh, you got to be kidding me, you know. But, and I decided to pull the pin there, and I made some phone calls to Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And a week later, I'm in the truck going to Kansas, and I've never met the guy. I've never seen the ground, but just pick up, pull, load up, and go.
And you got to
do it on a whim. And that was actually, it wasn't the best adventure for me. I mean, I caught a lot of coyotes and cats and coons, but the quality of the animals wasn't what I was anticipating.
Right.
The coons are spectacular, but the rest of it was not what I was expecting, so I got to make an adjustment on that next year.
Exactly, yeah. I see that. So that's a little bit on location and how you decide where to go and all that. Once you get there, kind of walk us through how you start your line, and do you automatically go in your multiple species? You target your coyotes first and fill in with cats, or vice versa? Or just kind of walk us through that.
I'm gonna talk about Nebraska. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite places to go. Super high density coyotes. There's a handful of cats around, lots of coons, and they've got a pretty good coon. But when I go in and I set that, I'm immediately setting the coon line first.
Okay.
And I'll primarily get my coon line out, and then I'll start pounding in some DPs along the way in those really good spots, and then you'll start working some areas for cats and but the coyotes are my bread and butter. You know the random cats there, and that's what they are, is they're pretty random cats. It's where I trap there. It's not a high density cat population. So I focus on coyotes because they immediately start paying. Next you're going to want to get your
but the coon line goes in first though, right?
Coyote line.
Coyote line goes in first. I think I misunderstood you. I thought you said coon line. Okay, yeah.
No, because the reason for that is because you start pounding in the coon traps right away, you're going to end up with 30, 40, 50 coons the next night. Yeah. Now that's cutting into your setting time.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
You know, I want to get my coyote line out first, and then we'll start filling
that.
In
well, that makes perfect sense. I think I misunderstood you.
Yeah. Coyotes first.
Yeah, gotcha. And then fill in between.
And I'm not going to pass up. If I see a fresh badger dig or something, he's getting set.
Right.
He's going to go for a ride in the truck.
Right. So. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So all this is just so different than, you know, my own mindset is live market. So, you know, we even approach things even differently.
I bet you do. Totally different.
Yeah, if he's not getting a 22, then, you know, it makes things quite a bit different.
Yep.
I think this is kind of, I'm learning a lot. I think this is interesting. So it's kind of, let's keep on going down this whole, you know, how Lee runs his line, kind of, you know. So now we got coyote sets in, we're filling in with coon sets and,
Yep, and where I trap in Nebraska, it's not a water line. There's really not there's really no beaver trapping to do, and very, very few mink to even consider chasing. So I get my coyote sets in. I'll get my coon traps in. If I'm going to hang any snares, I'll put some snares out. And then I start moving. Because I try to have more land than I can trap.
Right.
You know, and then you pick away at what you've got till you see your catch going down, and then you start moving. And then it's just constant work. You keep working through your land and it's just, I guess I don't even know how to explain it. You just keep working through it till it slows down, and that's another thing. If you've never traveled out of state, guys, is the first year is typically not your best year there. You know, you might have a good year, but you're still figuring out the land, you're figuring out where you want to trap. Some places produce more coyotes than others. But the second year you go, that's when all the cards fall into place and stuff really looks good.
That's right. And we've talked a bunch on this radio show about trapping out of state and going out of state, and a lot of times I'm convinced, and I've talked to guys that just on the phone and at shows and different things, and just because I've pounded so much on, I think sometimes the biggest step in going out of state is to decide to go to out of state. Once you commit to that, but the guys that say, well, maybe I can do it next year, or maybe next year never comes, it never gets here.
And here's an example. This year I started out in South Dakota, went to Michigan, came back to South Dakota, went to Nebraska, came back to South Dakota, trapped again in South Dakota, went to Kansas, and then came back when I was done in Kansas, and I'm like, okay, I'm done until I go to Delaware to trap muskrats.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't handle it. I ended up going back out for another week or a week and a half, yeah, or whatever it was, and then I pulled, and then I loaded up and headed to Delaware.
Right.
And, I mean, it's... You're picking up and you're moving, and you're picking up and moving, right, and you're picking up and moving, and the thing is when you're picking up and moving, boy, when you get to the ground where you're trapping, you gotta go. There's right. no time to pot anchor around and take your time, and
right.
I mean, you gotta get them sets in the ground and start catching fur immediately.
Absolutely. They don't catch when they're in the back of the trailer.
I've never found those traps full of fur.
Right. So I'd
love to, but
exactly.
But it's once you leave state, I think for the first time, you'll find it's really not that. I mean, it's mm-hmm. a big deal, but it's not as big a deal as you're thinking.
That's right.
You know. I mean, and I wouldn't hesitate now to go mm-hmm. anywhere at this right. point. You know. Yeah.
That's I love my trips. I absolutely love yep. my road trips. It's so much fun. And
you know, obviously regs are different everywhere. Yep. And our mm-hmm. South Dakota is a pretty good state for a trapper to be in, and mm-hmm. you find out that our laws are pretty good compared to a lot of different places.
Right,
you know,
that's right.
I didn't before I left South Dakota. I didn't have to have a trap tag for
right.
out loud. Now my traps look like a jewelry chain.
That's right. Wow. That's you talk about being fortunate where you live. Good gracious, I told folks this. I don't know if I've ever mentioned on the radio show, but this is not exact case, but you know, I'm from Mississippi, and Mississippi, you have to have a trapping license, and you cannot catch the governor, and other than that, there's not a whole lot of trapping laws. So we're very, very liberal, and I'm so proud of that, because you talk to these guys that, you know, can't hang snares at all, can't use body grips unless they're underwater, all the certain size limitations on jaw spread, all this stuff, and it limits you, really got to be on your toes yep. to know what you can do and you can't do legally. So.
Yep, and that's something when you do leave the state, you need yep. to talk. I always try to talk to a game warden.
Yep.
A game yep. warden someplace. I try to talk to him because, and one of my first questions, what are the most common things mm-hmm. that people get violated for?
Right.
Because that's
right.
probably the laws that are different than yours.
Exactly. Yeah. I think you're right. A couple of things floating in my head right now. I want to come back to this trap line because I got a couple of specific questions there, but I think it's a good segue here. You were telling me you don't do a lot of water work, even on your main lines. You said you do some for nuisance work, and I think that's important.
If I've got a landowner who's got beaver that are causing problems mm-hmm. or muskrats, you know, I'll go and I'll do that work when I'm in there. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm not a proficient handler of the beaver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the skinning and fleshing them, mm-hmm. I just don't.
Right.
I can put up four coyotes for the time it's going to take me to do one beaver.
Right.
And I just don't have that time to spare
exactly.
at the end of the night. And
right.
as a bait and lure guy, I should be trapping all the beaver I can
right,
because
right,
it costs
yeah.
me on the other end.
Right, I understand. The reason I wanted to go in there, and this is where I think it's really important, especially, I don't care if you're out of state or in state, but especially on new places that you go, is a lot of times those are doorways to get onto property.
Absolutely.
You know, and some case it's usually one of two. It's if you're getting on a property to do ADC work without getting paid, almost
yep.
your pay is the permission to trap thing.
Yep.
It's either going to be coyotes or it's going to be beaver most of the time.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I've never heard a guy say, "Hey, I've got a muskrat problem. Would you come?" You know,
yep.
it's going to be beaver.
Well,
it's going to be coyotes.
At home, the muskrats will start going into their dam faces,
okay. yeah.
and that's
yeah.
where they start getting excited.
Yeah.
But it is beaver is huge.
That's right. Yeah,
beaver is huge, and coyotes.
Yep.
And that's another thing, guys. You want to start gaining permission,
mm-hmm.
especially out west. Go out and kill a bunch of coyotes.
Yeah.
And let the word get around.
Right.
And the access will come behind it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right.
So
guys, I apologize. This airplane, I know it's gonna come through on this audio, but it'll be gone here in just a second. this is we're literally recording this live outside.
It's beautiful.
It's not perfect weather, there's not a cloud in the sky. It's just so much fun. Back to the line. What you're a dirt hole guy? You're a flat set guy?
I'm a big dirt hole guy.
Okay.
So I got a buddy of mine that'll ride with me one time. He says, "You're like I'm just a machine. You do the same thing again and again and again, and it's every function is the same." And I'm a huge dirt hole guy. They're quick. They're efficient.
Yep.
And you know, if we get a bunch of rain, then I'll move to some flat sets. And mm-hmm. you know, you got to be able to change up a little bit. But a big dirt hole guy.
Okay. That's something else that I've found. It's common between the successful guys that I've interviewed. A lot of guys have one or two or three sets, but they always have one. And it sounds like yours is dirt holes.
Yep, it is.
I think it gets to be, Clint uses this term all the time, I think it gets to be muscle memory.
It is.
I could probably put a blindfold on you where we're in a gravel parking lot, but if this was decent dirt, I could probably put a blindfold on you and give you your trap of choice, and you could probably set one right here.
Oh, yeah. If I had to bet a 650, I mean, the hole's about perfect. You have to do very little work to it after that initial dig, and it's just,
right.
It's just down. The earth anchor goes in the same upper right-hand corner.
Right.
For whatever reason, that's where the earth anchor goes in. Uh-huh. I mean, they're all the same. Every one of them is the same.
Yeah, yeah. So describe just real quick your dirt hole set for us, if you don't mind. I mean, is it a step down? Is it straight dirt? Everybody's got their little variation.
I'm putting my dirt hole in the ground. I'm going to say 6 to 8 inches is what it's going in the ground. As the ground gets frozen a little bit harder, it might get a little bit shallower because I'm dealing with frozen ground all the time there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just can't get it in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
are you an auger guy or are you digging by hand?
Early season, I'll use an auger in my drill.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the frost goes in, I'll end up, if I can get the auger in a little bit, I might take my driver for my wolf fangs and pound that in and then hog the hole out with that and make that work. It just depends upon what the soil's looking like.
Right, right, okay.
So, and then I'm coming back somewhere between 9 and 12, and I offset to the side. And I can say it's 3 or 4 or whatever it is, but I like to try and fence that off a little bit with clumps of dirt and not rocks. You know, eventually if you're using rocks when you're fencing them off in there, you're going to have that jaw come up, that rock come up and get caught in the bottom of your jaw, and the trap's not going to close.
Right.
And it always happens on a cat.
That's right. Never happens on a possum.
Never happens. Well, you guys will love this. Western South Dakota, I have never caught a possum. Not once.
Wow.
I went to Kansas, and my best night was 34.
I love it. Speaking of that, you've seen my booth. I'm straight across the aisle from you, and we're Expander Pan. We make big trap pans. That's what we do, and I guess as good as any. I throw my little plug in here. www.expanderpantraps.com. So now I'm a used car salesman here. So. but that's our website. But in addition to that, we make signs, and we try to have a little humor in there.
He's really got a neat booth, guys. He's got a lot of stuff that's worth
One of our signs I sold out of today, the first day of the show, and it's kind of oval shaped, and it says, it's got a picture of a possum in the middle. It says state champion possum trapper. It sold out today. I hadn't sold out of anything today until that. It's the first thing that sold out. So that's too. I think I can qualify for that. We can burn them up.
I might have been in the running after Kansas.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You could. Yeah, you may have been right there in placing. So. Anyway, well, that's cool. So, how did I run down that rabbit trail? We were talking about the set.
About a trap set. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But I mean, really, it's a standard dirt hole set. You know.
Yeah.
And
one thing I was going to ask you, because you're obviously a dirt hole is I'm sure with that setup you described to me. Now you correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just guessing here, but that should catch a coyote. That should catch a cat.
Yep.
That should catch a coon.
Yes,
that's a pretty versatile set.
It catches a wide variety of animals. And that's something, too, you know. It's I look at, some of my biggest years of harvesting cats. I think a lot of focus is put on, when we're talking about cats, it's put on, you know, flagging everything. And flagging helps. It's a tremendous, you know, add to the cats. But half of my cats come out of my dirt hole sets for coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
So don't pass up those transition areas where they're coming through.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to work a regular old dirt hole.
So here's a question that I had, and this is just a for instance, and let me see if I can paint a word picture here because this is radio. Say you got an awesome intersection, okay? Everybody's thinking of an awesome intersection right now, and you think it's awesome for coyotes because it's a coyote intersection. That's what should be there. And maybe you see a set or two of tracks there, but you also see a set or two of cat tracks there. I would think that if you put a flag, you're increasing your chances of a cat catch, but you're also probably zeroing out your chance for
Absolutely.
A coyote catch. What flips the switch in your brain to say, I'm going to make this a cat set, or I'm going to leave the flagging off and have it versatile where I might catch a coyote or a cat? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I, to answer that, I would it's gonna, for me, it's gonna go into the history that I have with the area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I know there's cats there, and I can make sense of why he would be using that as an established travel way.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a spot where I'm certain it's just a random pass through,
mm-hmm.
I would probably, if it's just a random place that he's coming through, I'm probably gonna leave it at 2 dirt holes,
because
mm-hmm. I'm confident that he's still gonna work that dirt hole
right.
set. I've caught enough of them in just a standard dirt hole set.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not going to totally scare me away from just putting a dirt hole with
right.
high expectations of catching him.
Right.
You know, because I'm going to go back to, if all you're doing is chasing cats, in our environment even, it's you can catch a lot of cats, like in South Dakota, but you got to cover a huge amount of area
mm-hmm.
to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not super concentrated anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to cover a lot of miles. The coyotes pay every day.
Right, right.
The coyotes pay every day.
Yep.
The cat yep. doesn't. You know, you got to, like my biggest year in western South Dakota, I had 40 cats in South Dakota and 3 off the Wyoming line.
Wow.
In Wyoming. So I had 43 western cats.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were just chasing the cats, that at that point we had a 60-day season.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even a cat a day.
Yeah.
If you're checking,
yeah.
I mean, if you're banging all your bucks on them cats, that's a lot of empty trap checking days.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and that year I had one day where I caught 7. So you take mm-hmm. 7 off of that.
That's right.
I
yeah.
mean, you really got a lot of empty trap check days mm-hmm. if that's all you're doing. So I'm going to hedge my bets on that coyote.
Right.
Over
right.
that cat.
Right. Right.
So. Because that cat's going to a catty area where mm-hmm. I probably have cat sets.
Right, right. And, you know, that makes perfect sense, too. You know, that actually hedges your bets for future years.
Yeah, because yeah. he's going someplace yeah. where he should be, where it makes sense to me. And I'm going to have a cat set there.
That's right, yeah.
So, I mean, I got a better chance of picking him up there anyway.
Right, right. That makes perfect sense. That sure does. You mentioned 2 dirt holes. You, yep. Opposite prevailing wind guy, like a lot of folks
yeah,
are.
Yeah, but what I'll do, like when I do 2 dirt holes, I'm going to go in, I'm going to put one on the northwest side, and I'm going to put one on the south side.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, it works great to pick up the first one, especially later in the season. If you pick up the first one, the other one's going to mill around. You're probably going to pick him up in that,
right.
that set that's not quite right. And we have a lot of changing wind
mm-hmm,
in
mm-hmm.
South Dakota. I mean, it's one day it'll be 40 degrees when you trap, and then the next day it's 5 below.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
so we
yeah.
got a lot of wind changes and heat ups and cool downs. And so I set both sides.
Right, right. Gotcha. And that seems to be, I mean, that's a real common thing from yep. a lot of smart coyote trappers that I've interviewed. That's a real common thing. And
Early in the season for us, we got a lot of junk to clean up. You mm-hmm. know, we don't have the possums where we at, but we got a ton of porcupines,
mm-hmm.
and we
mm-hmm.
got a lot of skunks, which skunks aren't junk anymore in this
right.
industry.
Right,
you know,
right.
There's
yeah.
pretty good
yeah.
money in skunks, but
yeah.
but they're, and I have a market for the porcupines, so I
oh,
can
cool.
make money there.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And
one thing I was going to ask you a second ago, I almost forgot. I'm glad you said that. Pan tension. When you're running a multi-species line like that, where do you stand on pan tension? And I know this is going to be so different than ours, because I don't want the junk. I want to keep possums out, and I run such heavy. I run, that's crazy amount, 6-7 pounds, 8 sometimes, pan tension.
This is going to sound crazy. I get asked that question all the time. I don't think I've ever set a pan tester on my pan.
Wow.
Never.
Wow.
I just, the way I know how it feels,
yep.
and that trap makes a certain sound when it clicks and
yep.
it latches, and I know it's where it needs to be.
Uh-huh.
If anything, I'm going to say it's a little on the lighter side.
Yeah.
Because I want to be able to catch that skunk when he comes in.
That's right.
And,
yep.
and the coon, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, I want to catch everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, so
right.
so I do run a little bit lighter pan tension.
Right, right. Okay.
Where you're live marketing coyotes, that's all you want in that trap.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So,
yeah. yeah.
So that's a little different.
Right.
But I can honestly say I've never set a, I don't even, heck, I wouldn't know. As silly
that's
as
right.
that sounds.
Yeah, you may want to borrow somebody's one day just to see. So that's interesting.
You know,
that's
like a 650, which I run a lot of 650. You can't set that just super, super mm-hmm. light, because it won't stay latched.
Right.
It'll
right.
self-fire.
Yep.
So you mm-hmm. got to have some pan tension
that's right.
on it.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, yeah. You're a big 650 guy? You like 650s?
I own quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my go-to trap,
right.
unless I'm trapping where we've got sheep.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trapping sheep with a 650, the sheep are sitting there waiting for you when you come to check your traps.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you got to
yeah.
use a 550 or
right.
something.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm.
but okay. They do run a lot of 650s.
I got you. Any particular modifications you do on them, or just
I do an outside lam. I put an extra swivel in them, and and that's what I run with.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, we're gonna have to try to get you on some expander pans to try. Anyway, we'll
have to talk about that.
Yeah, that's right. We'll get you to experiment with some anyway.
Yeah.
Anyhow, well, good deal. Any other tips from? You know, from Lee's trap line, is she
the biggest tip I got, if we're going to be out chasing coyotes, is don't quit, guys. I mean it's, especially if you're a new coyote trapper, it's hard to figure them out at first, but I think the biggest thing is figure out how to pick apart your country. There's a lot of country out there to set, and it's not all good. Those key spots are key,
right.
A lot of ranches I trap year after year, those sets go within 6 inches of the same place they went the last 5 years, and I know that because the earth anchor is sitting there from the year before because I couldn't get it out of the ground.
Right, you know? Exactly.
But it's just hard work. It's a lot of fun. It's hard work, but it's extremely rewarding.
Right.
You know.
You mentioned that about the earth anchors, and I don't know what it is. Trappers are, you know, I don't know that. I think frugal is too conservative a word. Cheap may be a better word. And hey, I'm right there with you guys. I'm not preaching at you. I'm right there with you. But I've heard so many guys talk about dig up, and this is one thing I don't do. They talk about digging up. I'm a Wolfang guy.
I am too, huge Wolfang guy. That's all I run.
Me too. And well, actually, I'm getting to drags now, but on the disposables, and I was disposables exclusively for years.
Yeah.
Is all Wolfangs, and they call them disposable steaks.
Yep.
You know why they call them disposable steaks?
Leave them behind.
That's right.
But
so many guys are killing themselves, and I hear them talk about this. And 100 is like nothing. I mean, yeah, you can.
Yep.
Anyway, I don't know.
For me, they go in. You know, a lot of them go in through the frost line. Well, they don't come back up through the frost line.
Right.
And then by the time you get there in the spring to get them out anyway, the cable's rotted. And you aren't going to attach it to another coyote trap anyway, because it's going to break the cable, you know?
Yeah,
I'm a huge Wolfang guy. And you know what? I had, up in Michigan this last year, spent a lot of time talking with Clint.
And
he's a huge, huge drag guy.
I
started using some drags this year.
Yeah.
Wow, there's something to be said about that.
I'm telling you what, I absolutely had an eye-opener year for this very same reason. I went to almost exclusive drags, and of course, Clint, and I'm sure you do too, use the Sabertooth. It's an awesome drag. That's a great drag. I happen to build my own. I built a really cool drag, but nothing. Sabertooth is an awesome drag. It's a cool both, and my drag is pretty cool, but I went. I wore 2 years ago at the end of trapping season. I wore elbow brace for about 6 to 8 weeks,
trying to pull
from swinging a hammer and driving earth anchors in. And I was trying to make some last minute quick sets, and I usually stay, I don't know, 14 day sets or something, and 10 days sometimes. But I was cutting that down. I was moving a lot because I was trying to catch the last few here and these last few, and I blew my elbow completely out. And it was like it took almost 2 months for this thing to heal. And I drove a few early in the season this year, and I was like gun shy. I was so afraid I was going to blow this elbow out. Cause I remember that pain. It hurts, you know. And I said, you know, Clint's such a huge drag guy because it's an energy saver. And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to set half drags. I'm going to set half earth anchors. And I started with my drags. And I set half the drags. And I think I was putting 4 dozen traps out on that first set. And I put 24 with drags out, and I think I maybe put another 6 out on anchors.
Yep.
And I stopped. I was out of drags. I stopped. I went back to my machine. I cut the rest of my drags for the rest of the traps I had, rigged them all up, and then went set the rest up on drags.
That's funny. So, when I went to Kansas, I'm setting, and I'm just throwing them drags everywhere.
Yeah.
And then I ran out, and I'm like, oh. Start pounding the ground.
How quick can y'all give me some drags here?
You know, when I was talking to Clint, you know, my biggest fear was, man, I don't want to be looking for a coyote 6 inches of grass all day long.
Yeah.
And he says, I mean, he told me, he ain't going to go anywhere any further than 40 yards.
Yeah.
50 yards. And that first coyote I caught on a damn face. And there's nothing there.
Yeah.
And he didn't go very far.
Right. Yeah.
Because I was thinking, okay, you got drags on a 3-day check. How far is this thing going to go?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And he just went in some big circles.
Yeah. Exactly. I was amazed on what little bit
It doesn't take much to hang one of them.
I'm talking about some soybean field and hung some of them soybean plants this year.
Yep.
Big coats, adult coats.
Yeah, and there ain't nothing to an old dried up soybean.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, he just felt some resistance there and he stopped. Yep. And he may hit the end of it again and he was just hanging out waiting on me.
Well, they just don't have any power when they're going with that drag on their foot.
Yeah.
It's just gone.
That's right. So. It's amazing, and my elbow never hurt when I was using drags ever. So it was
not only that, but pulling your traps to leave.
Oh,
that's pretty darn quick.
You know,
when you're picking up drags, that's quick.
Pretty much, I know the saber teeth. I know my drag are made like this. They got a long shank on them, and this is a really cool storage thing that I found because I never had used mini drags before.
Probably on bucket.
I just held it by the tooth end of the drag.
Okay.
And I would take the chain. So as you pull, I wrap it around that shank.
Yep.
All the way till it's just a ball of chain all the way around there, and then of course your trap is gonna be closed, storing it obviously. And you've got basically a perfect hole to go right over that shank. And then I hold it by the end of the shank and nothing comes off. It's all neat. It's all, nothing comes unraveled in your truck. And that just seemed like such a neat, cool way to store. Yeah.
Instead of digging through all the chain and you're trying to pull and tug.
Yes.
It doesn't work.
Exactly. I think that's a neater storage way than even with what I used to do with the trap chains on Earth Anchor. So,
cool.
That was absolutely a cool eye opener. So
the drags are
definitely something that.
Yeah, I'll be investing in quite a few more.
That's right. So I know you got a huge following. You do a lot of shows with. You've done several last couple of episodes. I've seen several of those on F&T's Freedom Outdoors.
Yep.
Just for the guys that may or may not know, I think, am I right that Freedom Outdoors airs on the Pursuit Channel?
Yes, it does.
Yep. You can check your local listings to find out when that comes on.
Yep.
And so you've done, I understand you did a couple more with Clint and some other guys.
Yep, I did three more this year.
Okay, cool.
And Clint did some, and Jeff Dunlap, and Harry did. And, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet.
Fun being up there.
Great guys
to be around.
I bet that was a blast.
Yep, it was a hoot. It was a good time.
Yeah.
Got to sit down and have dinner with them.
That's right. And Jeff's such a hoot. He's
a character. Jeff is an awesome guy.
He really is.
I enjoy him a lot.
Yeah. So just real quick, and we're going to start closing this thing up, but how did you get started with F&T Bunch? I know that's how a lot of folks associate with you from seeing you on those shows
It's kind of a funny story. When I was starting to buy a lot of equipment years ago, I actually drove all the way up to Alpena, Michigan, and it's like 1,180 miles. I know that route by heart now.
Wow.
And just to go pick up my trap order.
Wow, you must have a big trap order.
You know, it was only about $3,000. It wasn't it was a good size trap order, but not a huge barn burner or anything. But I wanted to meet the guys I was doing business with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I drove up there to meet Sean and Ralph, and great guys.
Mm-hmm.
Sean and Ralph are some great guys, and then it's just our friendship just took off from there, you know. So
it's been a
great relationship with them.
Cool,
And just other opportunities have arised.
Yep. And they, of course, F&T is a sponsor of Trapper Radio.
Correct.
And, and guys, we just, they're the people that bring this to you, them and the other handful of sponsors, and it's not many. Their dedication and their monetary contribution is what makes this available to you guys to be able to tune in and meet every week on the show. And so I try to, and I would certainly encourage you to spend your dollars with the folks that kind of take care of you. And sometimes they take care of you of making something like this podcast free to listen to. So
yeah, they're huge promoters of the trapping industry, and they're huge promoters in a positive way.
Absolutely. They really are. They really are. And all the sponsors are. And so we would just, we just encourage you to, listen to the sponsor and the sponsor list in the front of the shows, and you'll see them listed on the show notes. And that is just really important because, that's how they make their living, and from guys like us supporting them and supporting us through the information that we can gain through radio shows like this.
Yeah.
So, good deal. But we've been at this for a little while, and any parting words of advice or wisdom or anything we'll pass on?
I guess I got to get a bait and lure plug in here.
Yeah, that's fine. Come on.
Just so you guys know out there, I did start my own website, and that's www.roussatbaitandlure.com.
Okay, and spell that for us.
It's R-E-U-W-S-A-A-T-B-A-I-T, bait,
and lures.
And the word and, lure, L-U-R-E.com.
Gotcha.
And check it out, and you know, and again, there's a lot of, you know, the other trapping supply companies carry my bait and lure line as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I know F&T does, for sure.
F&T absolutely carries it. And I mean, Caven's got it. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of those guys have got my bait and lure in there, so you can find it there as well.
Cool.
But as far as like on the trap line, guys, just keep after it. Mm-hmm. I mean, just keep after it. It's fun. Take a kid with you.
Yeah.
You know, you got to take the kids with you.
Yeah. That's sound advice.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to go, you know, at some point in your season, make a point to take a kid or two with you, because they're the people that are going to keep us doing it later on, too. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking just in the sense of growing our sport.
Mm-hmm.
It's, we got to take the kids out with us, too.
Right. Absolutely. I completely agree.
And I appreciate all the people that help me, because I mean, all the people that buy my bait and lure,
mm-hmm.
and that helps me do what I do as well, and allows me to live the dream I want to live.
Absolutely.
And without you guys, it wouldn't be possible for me. So,
yeah.
You know, thanks to all of my customers out there as well.
That's right. So, and that's what makes it so cool, like the shows like this. I mean, you get a chance to, I know we touched on this earlier, but you get a chance to interact with those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And you get to talk to all these guys that they
know you, but they don't know you, and now they get to know you.
On a personal level,
you get to make a personal connection with them. And you also get to... You get to put a face to a name,
right?
Which is kind of cool, you know.
That's right. Well, I'll say this, and we're gonna close up, but here in a second. But I noticed this, you know, these days these shows typically have a day early on for dealer setup, and we come in and we're there set up, and typically dealer setup day is there just for that, for us to come in. Usually we've all, you know, you guys came from all the way from South Dakota. How far a drive was that?
It was 1,400 and some miles.
Wow.
It was a hump.
Yeah. You know, this is in Alabama, but this is East Alabama, and I came from West Mississippi, so even I had 5 or 6 hours to drive. And we get here, and we're tired, and you got to, you know, the hardest thing of the show is setting up. I mean, what we love about it is meeting the people and interact with people, but we still got to tear down all this. Well, the reason they have setup days different is so we can do this almost without having to field questions.
Yeah.
And, guys, y'all couldn't be here to see this, but I'm telling you, I was over here kind of minding my business, and I'm just kind of getting you in the industry with Expandapan, but Lee is straight across the aisle, and he's got person after person after. I felt so sorry for him. So this guy's never going to get set up. He's going to take
poor wife
all day.
Is doing all the work.
Yeah, and maybe that's my design now. Maybe that's
it. Wasn't.
Oh wow, but yeah, and so yeah, it was like, did they open the show a day early or what? And so I felt sorry for him. But this is how cool this guy is, folks. I never heard him say one thing. A lot of times it would have been really easy after they're gone, and yes, dealers are passing each other with box loads of stuff coming in. It would have been real easy for him to say, gosh, these guys won't leave me alone. I never heard him say one thing like that. He's always seemed so eager to talk to everybody, and he's going to be there till dark setting his booth up. And I thought that's really cool. And that goes unsaid a lot, unseen a lot. And I just thought I'd mention that, because that was really impressed me about how you handled yourself.
I appreciate that. I do enjoy talking to people, too.
Yeah, so.
That's cool.
Well, good deal. Well, I guess we will close the show with that. Guys, I appreciate y'all. Hopefully you learned something. I learned a lot from you, Lee. I appreciate you sitting down and talking to us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I hope you guys enjoyed it and had a good time listening to it tonight.
Absolutely. Well, cool. I think we all learned something. Well, guys, Clint will be back with you next week. And so until then, take care. And this is Chip signing off for Trapper Radio. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.